Welcome back in our podcast, Legal Ops Insiders, a podcast about everything related to legal operations aimed at heads of legal, general counsel, legal ops leaders, and everyone who's interested in improving or enabling digital services delivery. In this episode, we're going to talk about CLM Unpacked, the relevance of CLM, contract lifecycle management, in an AI-driven future. We have, again, for the second time, Job Wijbinga here as a guest expert at the table. Job, can you introduce yourself to those who didn't listen to the previous episode?
Thank you, Willem, and nice to be here again. Thanks a lot for having me. Yes, my name is Job Wijbinga. I'm a legal director at Friesland Campina, which is one of the biggest dairy players in the world. There I'm responsible for legal operations and for a number of business groups in our organization, the legal teams there. So previous stints at Coca-Cola, where I have been involved in legal operations as well, avant la lettre, to use a different language this time, and started in private practice.
Great. And of course, this time Jan-Willem Prakke is joining as well, of course. When we're talking about contract lifecycle management, or CLM, how would you want to define it? Because it has everything to do with contracting, but it's good to understand what are we talking about today, Job.
Well, you mentioned that I'm an expert at this topic, so thanks thanks for that question, Willem and Jan-Willem.
We expect a lot from you.
Yes, indeed. So the stakes are high, guys. So thanks a lot for that. Contract lifecycle management, it's all in the name, if you would ask me. It's the lifecycle management of a contract, including like legal obligations. And it's normally a system which is managing that for you. So that's a very, very short answer. But keen to hear your thoughts if I missed anything.
Well, the system is not managing it for you, I think. People need to, you still the users manage the contracts through the system, maybe that's changing. Eh? Maybe the system is managing more and more. The smarter it gets, the more it can do. That's maybe a question.
I agree. I think with artificial intelligence, much can be become agentic in a way, but you still want to have a CLM as your own basis where you have your own tooling for analyzing your contract lifecycle data, where you have the repository of the signed contracts. If there's any dispute or disagreement or so, that you can dig into previous versions or so, a repository, and that alerts you, of course, of upcoming renewals. And probably, and that's the case with WeAgreeBet, probably it captures also the contracting process, so everything preceding e-signing, and of course, I suppose you would want to capture the e-signing itself, or at least be able to monitor it with your e-sig signing solution. If we're talking about the pain points that CLM solves, what are the big problems when CLM comes in and makes your life as a legal department or as an internal business manager easier? Job.
I would say from the back of my mind, I would immediately come up with two answers. So one is speed. Yeah, the speed of the cycle, in that sense, so easiness for your stakeholders of the entire cycle. And the second one is compliance. So you mentioned just CLM being the backbone of your company. That's true, eh? Because if you would ask just a generic stakeholder in a company what a legal department should do, then the answer is managing contracts. And contracts are, of course, the backbone of a company, because it includes everything that the company undertakes, or normally it should be, at least in a contract. So it's avoiding disputes or coming back to disputes. But for example, as well, if you have an M&A project, you want to know the top five of customers, for example, and you want to know the obligations in that regard. Well, if you have a proper working CLM system or process, then it should be very easy to track and trace that.
Compliance, speed, I see that very well. You're saying people in the business ask will say, what does a legal counsel do? Well, they better speed up my contracting process and tell them the renewal coming up, compliance you're talking about. We have all the contracts in the CLM and not just an unreliable, probably not all of them, but at least all the NDAs, or maybe not all of them. And yes, we have the supplier agreements, but some of the supplier agreements are on general terms and conditions, so not necessarily all of them. And then you feel it, it starts getting messy, vague, and really not where you want to be. Who is then the owner of a contract, or who is the owner of the data that there are in a contract? The contract is not only rights and obligations, it's also matching compliance. It's also assigning risks or allocating risk among parties. It establishes a relationship. But who is here the owner of the contract at what point in time? Job, it can't be true that that's everything that you already said.
Or that it's the legal department.
No, it can't be true that it is the legal department, indeed, Jan Willem, because that's not realistic either. It's a very interesting and almost philosophical question. So who should be the owner of all the contracts? Because there are contracts are floating around in every company. And personally, I'm with a multinational company. So we're active in more than 30 countries worldwide. So there's a lot going on in terms of contracts. You can think about, of course, it starts with sales contracts. Mm-hmm. You can think about procurement. That's the bulk of the work, I would say, when it comes down to contracts. At my the company where I'm with, we have more than 20,000 suppliers. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a number of contracts. But think about, for example, real estate contracts. So we have a bespoke real estate department. They actually own their contracts themselves at this moment. Think about HR contracts. That's all about contracts as well. So your employment contract or termination contract or whatsoever. So short answer to or lengthy answer to a short question. Who owns the contract? It depends on the strategic decisions you make in that regard, and that impacts as well resource allocation.
I think here's the danger that HR have their own solution, and that real estate people have their own solution, and that altogether you don't build data.
But actually, that shows ownership. I mean, if you talk about ownership, so they have ownership. Real estate has ownership because they have their own contracts in their own system. Yeah. And I think that makes sense. Let's be clear. And that Salesforce is used by the commercial department. But in the end, a contract is what I always say. A contract is a contract. It's a document signed by two parties or more having responsibilities and duties. So you can, for the process, for term and termination, for alerts, data mining, it makes sense to have one process and actually one system. But you can have subsets of this system for the owner, real estate, HR, that have specific needs. Traditionally, I think, in most organizations, you have dedicated HR tools. And the HR tools have also capability of contract management. The same as, well, I already said Salesforce, but definitely also for real estate. There are many real estate management programs that all have contract capability. And the funny thing is, the strict legal part is often missing there. So they can do everything, but they cannot give alerts on when the contract terminates, for example.
But I think it's critical.
That's my experience when I had, for example, at Schiphol.
No, absolutely. And I think it's critical to have your ownership of who's the owner of the contract very clear, unequivocally clear, and to rely on the business who have their own responsibility. If you have 10 business units, or if you have, I don't know, that doesn't really matter how many, if you have more than one, and you have support staff like HR or IT and procurement and what have you, then ownership is critical. Procurement doesn't buy for themselves. They buy for the business. They buy for their internal stakeholders. It's critical that you define who is the owner of the contract, who's responsible for doing all the jobs under the contract, who's accountable in the end for a contract, who should be involved at any stage of the process. Is it the data privacy officer? Is it someone from a security officer? Is it R&D people? Or is it your legal counsel, of course? I think for legal departments, their ownership of contracts should probably be very minimal, but they are at the same time to be involved, to be consulted in the process, as they are the watchdog, as they are the guards of the CLM being kept up to date, I would say.
But at the same time, there are also contracts that you are responsible for as legal. So the contracts that you have yourself as a department, but also, for example, M&A contracts. There's much more ownership for legal than with an HR contract, for example.
Fully agree. And the way how we have set it up at Friesland Campina is that we are the owner of all the templates and that there are processes in place. Procurement is a good example. Mm-hmm. So our procurement department, as I just mentioned, we have more than 20,000 suppliers. So there are lots of contracts floating around. Our legal department has 70 persons worldwide. They cannot all support a procurement department for almost standardized contracts. So procurement actually owns a tool which is end-to-end for the procurement process. And contract lifecycle management is a module of that tool. And they fill the tool with standard contracts, mm-hmm. and if it deviates, it automatically runs through legal for approvals and for negotiation.
So you really can say CLM is somehow the backbone of an enterprise, of an organization. A question comes up. You see it with ERPs that have a contracting module.
Yep.
You see it also with CRMs or RevOps solutions like a Salesforce or like a HubSpot or what have you, to manage your contacts, to manage your marketing efforts, your sales efforts, your after-sales servicing. And then what is the position of a CLM tool in here? Is it really a third pillar on which the organization should build its business? Or is it something that can be supportive to either an ERP or a CRM, just as thin as an alerting tool?
I wouldn't say it's as thin as an alerting tool. I mean, that's not enough credit to a CLM system for sure. But I would say it can be a solution which is at the back of a solution, so not the front end. So, Jan-Willem, you just mentioned Salesforce. Which is a CRM solution, I guess that the audience knows that. But ideally, a sales department would use every day a CRM solution for its own activities, and a CLM tool can be built into that. The same can apply for SAP as a solution. But then again, at the same time, you want to have, as a legal department, all the insights that you need to make that data of use to improve your contracting processes, for example. So that's where a CLM tool comes in.
I think there's a really more where the CLM tool comes in, because what you see, CRM, you manage the data of your customers.
Yep.
With an ERP, you manage the resources and you make sure that you order the ingredients in time or components in time to deliver timely, and probably you connect it with your financial systems. Something that a CLM adds as value is that you have your contracts and everything that relate to your contracts all together in a repository that is in your CLM. But moreover, that if you upload your agreement, if it's a scanned document or whatever the form is, that you have automated data extraction, that it's automatically converted by a sort of OCR scanning as part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, you can do full-text search on your contracts. Now, I would say that this is typically something that connects to CLM, where, of course, you have renewal dates. That means that you need to be able to terminate timely. If you are going to terminate a supplier or an agreement, then you want to find a timely replacement. So you need to decide that timely for a replacement and have your procurement track for that in place. That is alerting. We see it also it's not so much in M&A transaction, but more in construction project, for example, that you don't have one deadline, but probably dozens or hundreds of deadlines. Yeah. And the funny thing with those deadlines is if one deadline is moving, lots of others follow that deadline. Which basically then you have a sort of floating deadline management, where in the construction project constantly dates are changing. And of course then you have project management tooling for managing that. Yeah. But you also need to anchor it in amendments to the agreement, and those change your data that are then ultimately managed through a CLM and a task common that you have. Job, you have...
If I may add there, because I think that's an excellent remark which we were just missing in the discussion. So again, coming back to CLM, so it's really the entire cycle of a contract, mm-hmm. and that's not done when the ink is on the paper or when it's virtually, of course, signed. But it can be as well during the lifetime of an agreement that you have like a sales kickback and you need to follow up on that. Or, for example, you've conducted a CAPEX contract and a performance qualification period will be followed up by, I don't know, a deduction, discount whatsoever to the supplier or customer. So it's the entire cycle, and there are lots of actions coming out of that.
That's very fascinating. For a long time I've been wondering, if you want to manage your contracts, and each and every type of contract has its own proper type of data on which you want to manage that contract. Clearly, for an NDA, you have a few parameters. Distributorships are managed on very different parameters. Yep. And of course, R&D projects yet on another scale, not to talk about HR agreements. But then there are also those tailored agreements, M&A, obviously one of them, where there are particularities to the deal. It's probably also your high-profile suppliers with which you have bonus-malus arrangements, with which you have, as you mentioned, kickback discounts, things that don't easily fit in a CLM metadata field, because you're not going to create a metadata field because there's one contract that has that field to fill.
Well, and you need to have a good understanding of how it works, how these systems can be very complicated, the bonus malus systems and things like that. So you need to have good understanding how it works. And at the same time, I always argue here is the value. If you talk about value of contracts, that is in these things. And if you forget that they are there or you interpret them wrong, it will cost the company money, simply. And it's one of the best examples to sell a contract lifecycle management system to the business. I mean, especially these things, you can actually add value to it, dollars or euros, which the business will understand.
Before we go to the next subject, what I see for those particularity arrangements, if you want to call it that way, is that they don't translate into CLM metadata fields, but rather into follow-up tasks that you extract
from
your contract.
But that's fine. That's just as important, right?
Absolutely. And they are sort of collected on a Kanban where you can see something coming up, and that may be the particular some funny tasks that run along the notifications, but still they are on the radar.
Yep.
I think also there, but we're going to talk about that later.
One thing, people change, people swap roles, for example, or leave the company or start, and then you capture that still in your CLM system, so it's close to the contract rather than it's attached to the person.
Agree, yeah. And you have communications alongside your contract to be fallback on. But of course, yes, you want to extract what is agreed and what are the follow-up arrangement to prevent beautiful words, revenue leakage. When selecting the right CLM solution, what are success factors, Job? What do you see as key drivers for successful selection?
Is your question which supplier to select or when the project will be successful?
Well, that's a nice thing. Let's split the question. When the project is successful, is in my eyes, when you do your implementation correctly, when you build capacity in the organization to give first-line support, hands-on, people who can tell how it works and get the adoption within the organization. It's not only within the legal department, but also with internal stakeholders. Now, I'm rather talking about what are the high-level considerations in a process for selecting a CLM and to get that across.
Thanks a lot. That's a broad question, eh? So I'll do my utmost to answer that in a brief manner. And actually, we touched upon that in the previous episode as well, to a certain extent. And what I'm referring to is you're bombarded with solutions and how to find your way between all of those suppliers that there are in this field. And by the way, CLM as such is, I think when it comes down to legal tech, legal ops, it's one of the oldest solutions that there is in the market actually available. But back to your question, you are asking when is it successful? It all starts with business requirements, right? So you need to be very, very clear what you need. And therefore, you need to have good discussions and strategic discussions on whether you need a CLM, what do you need it for, who's the owner, so what's the scope of the ultimate project, so which type of contracts to put in, which not. You need to have alignment with IT and with the IT architects, because there are lots of interdependencies. We already touched upon Salesforce, for example. We touched upon different solutions, same as e-signatures, for example. Mm-hmm. But you probably would need to have APIs with your CLM solution. So it all comes back to what are your business requirements? So which problem are you trying to solve here? And is CLM the right solution for that that problem? And hence, do you then need an external one? Or would you need a solution which is already there in your enterprise, which happens to have a CLM module? We touched upon that at the beginning of this episode as well. So lots of solutions already have a CLM module, like an SAP, which is as well one of the backbones of a company normally. But then, again, coming back to that business requirements, do you need something else? And if so, yes. And then, of course, you look at the market. And it's, again, as well, depending on available budget, available resources, and the speed.
Yeah, interesting. What I've seen with a customer who worked with contract automation, so the pre-signing part, is they felt that the registration process of contracts in SAP was quite burdensome. Mm-hmm. Lawyers didn't want to work with it. Yep. And then if you have an API connection, and then it's actually you're filling a sort of CLM already on your contract automation solution to push those data afterwards, the full set, the complete set that you had in a user-friendly way inserted, handed over in a way into an SAP or other ERP solution. I think one of the critical elements in a CLM is really the quality of your data. Data drives decision making. It really gives you the insight. So of course you need to be able to not only to track your data properly, but also have proper reporting or dashboards or widgets or whatever you want to call it. But the data,
management information, the simply management information, correct management information that drives decision making.
And that requires proper data. I think also because adoption is one of the bigger challenges, it's for every tech solution, but legal tech in particular, adoption is also a big one. So you would want to track parts of the contracting process. How long do they take?
And if data quality is poor, the users will simply say the software doesn't work. I get wrong information, the software doesn't work. Well, I mean, that's the simple reaction that people get. They will simply blame the software, but 9 out of 10, it's the quality of the data that is the problem, or just how to use it. That's what we said earlier. Training is very important, user training. But 9 out of 10 is just poor data quality. And then the whole solution becomes obsolete, basically. and people don't trust it anymore and will not use it anymore. They will start work around. They will start to file their own contracts because they can trust that. They have been involved. They know what's in there, so they keep it in their own file. I think this happens still in many organizations. There are multiple contract storages in the office, basically.
It's deeply problematic. This has to do with unclear ownership in contracts and in the contract data. I think, indeed, you need a platform that provides you with proper metrics on how much time does this process or this process element actually take. I see it a lot. There are users who come up with excuses, and then you, as a head of legal, you want to listen to your users or your non-users. Actually, they are raising all kind of excuses, which basically identify, reveal where in the process, and 9 out of 10 times that's in the process of implementation, things went wrong, and then decide, blame the legal tech solution for not being the right solution, while the reality is you don't really know. You're listening to the emotions of people, while the facts, the metrics that are in the system are telling you a different story. Or rather, that there are no metrics in the system because it's never been properly adopted and implemented, and therefore you are doing intuition-based decision-making, Job.
No, I was.
Data quality is not just a matter of implementation. Eh? That's where just where it starts. It's a continuous process, keeping the data in good order.
You're right, and I was about to say this doesn't happen at all at Friesland Campina.
No, that's why you're here in this podcast. You know.
So, of course, it happens everywhere. So that happens with us all the time as well. And now it comes back again to the two reasons I just mentioned at the beginning. Eh? So this is driving compliance and this is driving speed. So if people keep on using their own templates, then there is a chance that it will become a little bit more obsolete or incompliant at a certain moment, because it's not, again, aligned with the latest regulations, for example. And in terms of speed, so from the Friesland Campina perspective, so we have legal teams in like 17 different countries. Mm-hmm. If everybody starts to work in one similar manner, you can get a lot of more speed in terms of the contracting process, rather than everybody adding all kinds of mystifications on local law, which is often not the case. So I think that a CLM solution can help to increase that speed and that global way of working.
Now, that is a very fascinating question. I've seen one of our customers who had tendered for a CLM. We provided that for them. And then the first 2 years, believe me or not, I have been encouraging them to start small and as soon as possible, because you need to learn from where you stand and how things work in your organization. But they decided that they first needed to align their processes, fully align their processes, before they actually wanted to start. Now, that is, of course, to the irritation of many, many people in the whole of the organization, where you announce signing on a CLM solution and starting the implementation of a CLM, and then starting a project of aligning your processes and then continuing the internal Polish land day, if you wish, for how those processes should run before, after 2 years, they actually started to discover that also with hitting off with a simple NDA triggered another series of issues relating to, in the organization, they had 16 NDA templates and none was willing to give in on it, and yet their continued discussion took place. Is it worth the preparation investment on exploring all those processes, whether you have signed up for a CLM solution already, but before kicking off? Or could it be part of your implementation that you say, we allow ourselves, while we go, so we will start, we acknowledge that we will have process challenges along the way that affect adoption probably, what should have your priority?
Thanks. And Jan-Willem would be keen to hear your thoughts on this one as well. So, yes, what should have my priority in-house? I think that there is a lot that you can already prepare offline before you go online. And you should do that. So if we're talking about a project on the implementation of CLM, that's not only selecting the right provider, if you need any. I think the majority is on the process and on managing the change, on making your process more effective. And actually, the majority of that should be done offline. You guys have, at We Agree, I think, excellent contracting conventions, for example, that you guys launched years ago. But actually, it comes back to that, for example. So what we did at Friesland Campina, but back as well at Coca-Cola, is we made rules on what we would use, how we would use formatting in contracts. And that allowed us to make a comparison of all the clauses that we are using in our different, well, in this case, procurement contracts. Mm-hmm. And then you can work towards more and more standardization, fallback clauses, etc. So that if you have that entire process ready, it makes it easier to implement it later on. But Jan-Willem, keen to hear your thoughts on that one as well.
No, I agree with what you say. I mean, that is what is important. And also in this, it is important to use this to get the business aligned. They need to understand this very well. And that's not just the lawyers. It's mainly the users in the end and the contract owners. And I think in the optimum situation, you have one standard way supported by the right software of how you deal with contracts. And then in the end, you have the specifics for one department or specifics for another department. But I think in the ideal world, especially for large organizations, you have a standard way of how to deal with a contract.
Fascinating. It inspires a lot, I must say. But I want to work towards an end of this episode, and we still have the quite fascinating aspect of artificial intelligence in CLM.
Yeah.
AI, I would limit this a little bit to the post-signing enablement of artificial intelligence. Job, how do you see that?
Well, AI bears a lot of promises in it, and we've talked about this as well in the previous episode, but if you would zoom in on CLM, it bears a lot of promises as well. For example, in terms of dynamic contracting, so what do I mean with dynamic contracting? I just mentioned fallback clauses, for example, and AI with a sort of a decision tree really helping you out or your stakeholders doing the contract and negotiating the contract without, for example, the involvement of a lawyer. But as well in terms of the metadata, which is there, maybe the future will bring with help from AI that you actually don't need an extensive CLM solution, but you would need a more extensive AI solution which can run through your existing contracts and help you out in terms of the analyzing of the data, making your contracts better, faster, the contracting process itself. So I think that for sure it will impact the domain of CLM. It is already doing with a lot of CLM providers claiming that AI is centric.
Exactly. And they claim that, but I think that's still not the case. What I see, for example, is that many contracts are not even readable by AI tools. We have now an example of a customer in Germany who needs to import 5,000 contracts in a CLM system, but the AI is not able to get all the data out of these documents, so it needs to be done manually. And I think we're still in that phase. We have still documents that are not scanned in the right way, or double-sided documents that have been scanned on one side. This is the reality. This is still floating around in existing CLM systems, for example. So back to the point of data quality, it starts with that. And also AI can only deliver true value with the proper data. I mean, it is an open door, I know. But I think especially with CLM, this is the case. And especially if you look at companies with a long history, some contracts. We recently saw contracts of a certain company who has guarantees, product guarantees, with over 40 years. So they need to have that available still, because the customers can still claim warranty under these contracts. So you need to have these. And these are contracts that have been signed 40 years ago on paper with a fading ink. and things like that. So I think in the end, when AI really would work is when AI is also involved in creating the contracts. If the contracts are completely digitally created and signed, I think that is where it starts for the use of a proper use by AI.
I think.
What do you think?
No, I have a bit more. I'm less skeptic than you are in a way, because I think AI does add value. It's yes.
No, I don't say that. It will definitely add value.
No, okay. Sorry. I think the example of contracts are unreadable. Of course, you may encounter this, but it's I think a bit more of the exception than the rule. Proper tooling. It's also easy to capture all kind of functionalities like full text OCR, so scanning a file, converting it into a machine readable text, indexing all your contracts, full text searchable tooling. That has nothing to do or little to do with artificial intelligence. Those are just open source modules that you should have on your CLM solution to do automatically, I would say. That you do some fuzzy search exercises. You can make a typo, you can use British English, and it also finds American English text if you wish. But AI on top of that has already quite some powerful features. Summarize a clause. You just select the clause in the interface and you ask, summarize this clause in 50 words. Just you throw in your contract and you ask the AI, retrieve, or get all the tasks that are the follow-up tasks, so not the key obligations, but really a sort of the annual reporting, delivery on annual accounts or so, or financial status type of documentation, tasks that are not your key obligations. Those are relatively easily extracted from the agreements. Mm-hmm. And as we see that within WeAgree, it's a sort of you validate it and you convert it with one click into a task that then automatically sends out notifications. And like that, we have customers who have very extensive agreements. If you talk about large procurement or large sales tender documents where a state tenders for a very large project an agreement, the clauses that you find in those agreements, while every country has its own level, quality level of writing an agreement, no standard, no, by any means, all those contracts have liquidated damages clauses, they have force majeure clauses, they have payment in installments, they have applicable law. AI can really easily extract those. A CLM enables you to, once extracted and having the CLM data in place, the metadata, to convert that into a deal memorandum that you can hand over to the contract team, that you say, this is what they sent us, these are the key negotiation elements that we are going to face in the next few weeks. Here, AI, I think, is very powerful, but yes, tomorrow may be very different when we talk about AI. Job, do you have something to add here?
No, I think if I can do like a short summary, CLM is evolving rapidly and AI is impacting that. But to the point of Jan Willem, there is a reality as well. So please remain critical and not everything is already ready for AI. So if you need to choose, choose wisely and prepare for what's coming.
Now, this is really the conclusion of this episode. Thank you for listening. If you have some thoughts for further elaboration, if you want to ask Job something or us anything, let us know. For now, I would wrap up this episode. Thank you, Job, for joining us for these episodes. Jan Willem, of course, for your questions. And thank you to the listener for being on the podcast. Thanks.